The coroner's inquest into the murder-suicide of a mother and her autistic son will come to an end today in Prince Rupert. Angie and Robbie Robinson were found dead in their home in 2014, and the question of whether families of autistic children can sufficiently access support services has been at the center of the inquest. The jury is expected to make their recommendations known later today. The CBC's George Baker has been in the courtroom all week, and he's here to tell us more about what he's seen and heard. George, good morning.
Good morning, Carolina.
What do you know today that you didn't know last Monday?
Just how chaotic and challenging life was for both Robbie and Angie Robinson. When we began reporting on this story in April of 2014, it wasn't actually clear what led to the decisions Angie made. In fact, it was easy for many of us to be angry at Angie Robinson, who murdered her severely autistic son before taking her own life. But this inquest has opened a new light on the types of pressures she was under. Robbie Robinson was severely autistic, we know that. But life at home was toxic. Police say Angie faced domestic abuse at the hands of Robbie's father, Robert Much. Life at school was a growing challenge, and Angie suffered from depression. She had tried to commit suicide on three different occasions before April of 2014, and she and Robbie were not able to receive the kind of help she felt she needed.
Well, George, let's start at home. What kind of light does the inquest shine on what came to in that environment?
Carolina, Angie lived in fear. Her partner, Robert Much, broke into the house several times, was verbally and physically abusive towards Angie, say police. Her severely autistic son was growing in size, almost triple her weight at age 16, and was becoming harder to control. In one piece of testimony from RCMP Constable Bryson Gladish, he says that three officers were needed to restrain Robbie at a hospital. Robbie had been smashing his head against a wall, and staff wanted police to help. In a testimony given by Aunt Michelle Watson, and I will just quote here, she says Angie attempted suicide three times leading up to the murder-suicide of Robbie. She tells the court that Robert Much's lack of participation in Robbie's life led directly to his son's situation getting worse. Robbie would headbutt Angie when agitated, and the only respite was to go for hour-long walks at Butsy Rapids here in Prince Rupert. Michelle says Angie asked if Robert Much could take care of Robbie, but ironically, a peace bond she had filed at provincial courts to keep Robert away from her and Robbie prevented that from happening.
So how does the father, Robert Much, respond to this?
Well, when he was called to the witness stand, he leaned back and looked unhappy with the inquest itself. In his testimony, he says he felt ambushed by the whole process, that he was offended by Michelle Watson's testimony. Though he does not dispute that there were court orders and peace bonds against him, and he said that when Robbie was agitated, the chaos was just incredible, but that it was more about him and Angie not being able to cope. He finishes his testimony by asking the judge if he's required to stay for the whole inquest, or if he could just get the transcript.
George, let's go to school now. What was life like for Robbie and the people at school that he worked with?
Well, we heard from both Robbie's teacher and his high school vice principal. And it was clear, I should say, before we go any further, how beloved he was by both the teaching staff and by the school administration at Charles Hay Secondary School. Robbie was an early entry into high school, meaning he was entered into high school even though he was actually younger than 12 years old. Now, that's because of his immense size. Again, this pops up. His violent outbursts posing a risk to elementary school kids of his own age. Both Vice Principal Kevin Leach and his life skills education teacher Christine Danroth spoke of a lovely boy, however, who had developmental challenges. Again, Robbie smashed his head at school when agitated. Kevin Leach says on one occasion Robbie headbutted his head against a bus window. In another occasion, Leach says Robbie was found at the back of the school smashing his head against a concrete block. The sound, he says, was very difficult to listen to.
So why didn't they simply stop Robbie?
Leach says that as long as Robbie wasn't really hurting himself, it was a good way for Robbie to get his energy out. I should say that they believe that his endorphins, you know, the type of things that, I guess, in your brain that release happy chemicals, they would be released if Robbie could smash his head. So therefore, he would calm down.
But what if he did hurt himself?
Well, Angie Robinson would be called to pick him up. And according to Christine Danroth, just the mere mention of Angie coming to school would calm Robbie down.
George, how did the family reach out for more help in the midst of all of this?
Robbie was sent to respite housing to give Angie breaks. Now, that worked for a while, but as Robbie got older, that no longer became an option. He would headbutt kids in wheelchairs at the respite home, knocking the kids right out of the wheelchair. Robbie was not in control of his behavior. Of course, as we've mentioned, he was severely autistic, but the supervisors at the respite home in Terrace couldn't accept the risk and kicked Robbie out of the home. Angie also sought help from Kitimat autism specialist Miriam Allen, but her services cost $100 per hour, which included 5 hours of travel time to and from Kitimat. Angie only received $6,000 per year from the Ministry of Children and Family Development, and a couple of sessions in the summer would eat up all that she could afford to spend on Allen's services.
Well, this brings up the question, where is the Ministry of Children and Family in all of this?
They were there. Child safety workers with the Ministry of Child and Family Development did reach out to Angie Robinson, but as we learned throughout the inquest, there were serious gaps. For instance, child safety worker Tracy Bainan says she never followed up on 3 separate suicide attempts by Angie before Angie ultimately took her own life and Robbie's. Offers for Angie to stay at the North Coast Transition House when things got bad with Robert Much came with strings. Robbie wasn't allowed at the Transition House because of his violent outbursts. And when asked where Robbie would go if Angie went to a Transition House, Bainan admits she never knew. But this was 2013, and Robbie at this point had been kicked out of the Terrace Respite Home. So even if there was a home for him to go to, it wouldn't be within driving distance. It appears that Angie had a difficult choice to make: stay and risk more domestic violence by Robert Much, or leave and have no idea what would happen to Robbie.
So we are at the end of the coroner's inquest today. George, what sort of information are we waiting for now?
A jury is going to make its recommendations today. Now, that inquest jury is mandated to determine the identity of the deceased, when, where, and by what means they came to their deaths. As well, the jury is encouraged to make recommendations that might prevent future deaths in similar circumstances. And I have to say, Caroline, throughout the inquest, the jury have been asking a lot of questions of all the witnesses that have been giving testimony. So they'll have a lot of information to work with. And to do this, they actually have been given a broad mandate. There's no specific mandate here. It's let's see what information we can use that will prevent another murder-suicide in a similar situation as this.
And you expect recommendations later on this afternoon?
Sometime this afternoon, that's correct.
We will continue to follow this story on CBC. George Baker is an associate producer at CBC Daybreak North. He joins us live in our Prince Rupert studio this morning. George Baker, thanks again.
You're quite welcome.